Welcome to S&C Critical Insights. I'm Matt Schwartz, a partner in Sullivan & Cromwell's litigation group in New York. Today we're here to talk about the U.S. Supreme Court's recent decision in Cyan versus Beaver County Employees Retirement Fund. The decision dealt with the important issue of where plaintiffs can bring claims concerning public issuances of securities under the Securities Act of 1933. We're going to, first, place the decision in the context of the key securities litigation statutes. Second, discuss what Cyan means for issuers of securities. And third, close out with the discussion of how issuers can manage their risks after Cyan, as well as what new issues might be coming up on the Supreme Court's docket. With me here to run through these issues is David Rain, my partner in S&C's litigation group in New York and an experienced securities litigator. So David, in a nutshell, what happened in Cyan?
Thanks, Matt. In short, in Cyan, the U.S. Supreme Court unanimously held that plaintiffs bringing claims concerning public offerings of securities under the Federal Securities Act of 1933 can choose to bring those claims either in state court or in federal court. The Supreme Court also unanimously held that defendants, who are typically the issuing companies, the senior officers and directors, and the underwriters of the offering, are not permitted to remove those state actions to federal court. Now, note that the Cyan decision concerns only claims based on the offering of securities, not the trading of securities, which are covered by the 1934 Exchange Act. Matt, could you share with our listeners why the law makes a distinction between claims like the ones in Cyan based on securities offerings and claims based on securities trading?
Sure. A little history may be in order here. So in response to concerns about securities fraud leading up to the Great Depression, Congress enacted the 33 Act, which governs registration of securities. The 33 Act also gives a private right of action to purchasers in securities offerings to sue the issuers and the underwriters. To bring a claim, the purchaser must allege that the offering documents, meaning the registration statement and the prospectus, contain materially misleading statements or omissions. Congress allowed these claims about securities offerings to be brought in federal or state court. But somewhat uniquely, Congress prevented defendants from removing claims brought in state court to federal court, despite the fact that a federal statute was at issue. One year later, Congress enacted the Exchange Act of 1934, which was subsequently interpreted to allow a private right of action, but only in federal court. So you have a dichotomy between the 33 Act on one hand and the 34 Act on the other. So you might think that the issue posed in Cyan has been clear for more than 80 years. David, why do you think the Supreme Court needed to take up the question of removal under the 33 Act claims?
The reason was uncertainty caused by Congress's enactment more than 60 years after the 1933 Act of two new statutes. First of all, in 1995, Congress enacted the Private Securities Litigation Reform Act, or PSLRA, and that changed the procedural rules for private securities claims. The PSLRA came out of Congress's concern that class action plaintiffs' attorneys were abusing securities litigation to obtain large windfalls as class counsel, with the result that companies were discouraged from issuing public offerings. So Congress set limits on which plaintiffs could lead securities class actions. Congress also heightened the specificity requirements for what plaintiffs have to plead to survive a motion to dismiss. And they also said that discovery couldn't proceed until after the court ruled on the motion to dismiss. Now, plaintiffs' lawyers soon tried to get around those PSLRA restrictions by filing in state court, where they argued that the new procedural rules didn't apply. In response to that, Congress enacted the Securities Litigation Uniform Standards Act, or SLUSA, in 1998. SLUSA says that all but the smallest securities class actions may be removed to federal court, where state law claims, like common law fraud, would then be dismissed as preempted by federal law. But lower courts soon split on interpretations of the removal provision. So did SLUSA effectively override the 1933 Act's provisions that claims could be filed in state court and not removed? Well, in Cyan, the Supreme Court held that it did not. because Congress would have used a clear statement if it intended to nullify an express prohibition on removal of claims to federal court. So, Matt, why does the Cyan decision matter? Are the elements of a 1933 Act claim the same, regardless of whether you're in federal or state court?
Well, David, Cyan matters because it provides certainty that 33 Act claims brought in state court will remain in state court, with the caveat that if a plaintiff also brings other federal claims in the case, as sometimes happen, then defendants can remove. In other words, if plaintiffs want to ensure that defendants can't remove the case, they need to stick to 1933 Act claims and not bring other federal claims. Now, the court in which a 33 Act claim is brought is very important because there are significant differences between state and federal courts that often make plaintiffs more likely to choose state courts. First, many state court judges are unfamiliar with federal securities claims and so may be less comfortable granting motions to dismiss at the outset. Civil practice in some states may also make such a decision more unusual than it would be in a federal court. So, for example, in an amicus brief submitted in the Cyan case before the Supreme Court, law professors showed that from 2011 through 2016, federal courts dismissed 31% of 33 Act suits, while California state courts dismissed only 6%. In securities class actions, of course, the motion to dismiss stage is critical. Surviving it generally increases perceived settlement value because defendants may face costly and disruptive discovery. By taking removal off the table, Cyan could make state court filings more popular among plaintiffs' attorneys. Second, the national nature of the securities markets gives plaintiffs' attorneys latitude to select the most plaintiff-friendly jurisdictions. Now plaintiffs have increased incentives to seek out state court jurisdictions where they perceive the substantive or procedural law to be more favorable or where the jury pool might be more sympathetic to their claims. Another reason is that because authority is divided on whether state courts should follow the PSLRA procedures that you described earlier, plaintiffs may seek out courts that do not apply them, especially the PSLRA's freeze on discovery until after the motion to dismiss stage. Earlier discovery could advantage plaintiffs and increase settlement pressure on defendants. And finally, another reason is that forcing 33 Act claims to be brought in federal court would tend to consolidate claims about the same offering in a single federal court under the well-developed federal rules for multi-district litigation, among other procedures. After Cyan, defendants now face the risk of parallel proceedings in 33 Act claims in multiple state courts and in federal court. Defendants will have to spend more resources defending on multiple fronts and risk inconsistent decisions. On the flip side, plaintiffs might be incentivized to settle more quickly rather than risk res judicata or collateral estoppel from decisions in parallel proceedings. So, David, given that Cyan looks like it will increase the attractiveness of state court for plaintiffs, what can corporations do to minimize their exposure in state venues?
Well, Matt, every situation is different, but generally speaking, here are a few suggestions. First of all, corporations can reduce their exposure to 1933 Act claims by shortening their lockup periods when offering securities. Private 1933 Act claims require plaintiffs to trace their shares to those issued in the offering that involved the allegedly material misstatement or omission. IPOs typically have 180-day lockup periods where company insiders can't sell their securities after the offering. Once insiders can sell the shares that they owned before the IPO, it becomes very difficult to determine whether shares that the investors bought in the market were issued in the offering or came from these management sales. So that effectively defeats the tracing requirement. Shortening this lockup period could shorten the time period for sales for which purchasers can claim injury under the 1933 Act. Another suggestion is that issuers can make sure that their insurance policies for offering liability cover claims that are based on pre- and post-offering activities, and that they also extend to state court claims that arise under state law. So, for example, if the insurance only provides coverage for matters after the offering, it can raise questions as to whether the coverage extends to alleged misrepresentations made before the offering in selling the securities. Potentially applicable insurance policies need to be reviewed by an experienced insurance counsel at the outset of the offering process. And corporations might consider buying public offering of securities or POSI insurance. Another suggestion is that corporate issuers might also consider a forum selection clause in their articles of incorporation that makes federal court the exclusive venue for Securities Act claims. Plaintiffs will likely challenge these kinds of clauses, which will create another issue for litigation, but some courts have been willing to enforce them. So recently, several companies, including Snap, have included similar clauses in their organizing documents during IPOs. A stockholder is challenging those clauses in a number of cases, such as those involving Blue Apron, Stitch Fix, and Roku, that are before the Delaware Chancery Court. And the stockholder is arguing that those clauses are contrary to Delaware law in a case that's called Skierbakucci versus Salzburg. Now, that decision and other future litigation could well impact the validity of this strategy. Issuers will also want to look out for SEC or FINRA guidance or regulation on this issue. Matt, Cyan was an interesting case, but what's coming down the pike in securities litigation for the next Supreme Court term?
Well, David, not much. As of now, the Supreme Court only has one securities case on its upcoming docket. It's Lorenzo versus SEC, which is a follow-up to the Janus Capital Group. At issue in Lorenzo is whether a misstatement claim under Section 10B of the 34 Act against a defendant who did not make the statement, that is, the defendant did not retain ultimate authority over the statement, can be repackaged as a fraudulent scheme claim.
Well, it'll be interesting to see how Lorenzo turns out. Is there anything else, Matt?
Yeah, even though the Lorenzo case is the only securities case on the docket for the Supreme Court so far for this next term, the Roberts Court has shown an interest in hearing securities cases, so they might very well pick up more cases as the term goes forward, and we'll keep our listeners up to date on those cases as well. And with that, we're going to have to wrap up, David. This has been an S&C Critical Insights deep dive into Cyan and securities law cases on the Supreme Court's docket for next year. Thank you for listening. For more information about our practice, please visit us at www.sulcrom.com.